We would also like to take a special time today to welcome our guest speaker, Becky Leiser. Becky is a recent graduate of Starr King School for the Ministry. She just finished a term as intern in the Livermore Church and will be spending the next year as a hospital chaplain in San Francisco. Becky is hoping to become a spiritual director, a person who helps people live out their highest aspirations. Now,
it's last year in December. I'm at Nutcracker Weekend with my daughter, Sarah. She performs yearly in this professional grade ballet. It's a whole weekend of really intense dancing for her, and so it's the one weekend of the year where she gets to be a complete diva. And I get to let my inner theater geek out for the weekend. You see, I'm a backstage mom, and so I steam the costumes so that they look crisp and bright to the audience, and I help the dancers transform quickly from one character into another. And I'm a grounding source for the kids, reminding them, walk, don't run, breathe, and let go of the fear. And of course, it's okay. You know what to do. Truthfully, it is one of my favorite weekends of the entire year. It's just after the first show on Saturday. I'm sitting in the green room sewing on a costume that has lost a snap due to the pressures of quick changes and hard dancing. It's about an hour and a half before top of show. In a half hour, the dancers will converge on this room to get notes from the director. But in the meantime, the pre-professional dancers who range in age from 7 to 18 are scattered throughout the entire building. The littlest dancers are corralled into their room watching movies. The 12 to 14-year-olds are downstairs in their dressing room. They're playing Secret Santa to each other, and they're prepping for the upcoming show. And the oldest girls are doing their best to ignore the 12 to 14-year-olds while they talk about boys and music and calmly retouch their makeup and don the correct costume. The 10 to 12-year-olds are just too excited. They can't be in a dressing room. They're already dressed for top of Act One, and they're strewn across the seats of the green room like so many animated costumes, chattering away at each other. They're reliving the highlights from the first show. Things are humming along exactly as they're supposed to be. But in a minute, all of that shatters and changes for me. You see, I get that phone call, you know, the one that you dread and you know it's going to come at some point. A family member reporting the death of another family member. My sister Ruth calls to tell me that my dad contracted pneumonia. He was having difficulty breathing, so his wife and stepson took him to the emergency room. The ER staff got him stabilized and gave him some medicine to try to dry out his lungs. And the doctors told Dola, my stepmom, that it was going to be a while. So her son took her back home. The house is about 45 minutes away from the hospital. And while she was gone, Dad's heart slowed down and his breathing got labored. They offered to intubate him, but Dad wasn't having it. You see, the last time his body stopped working correctly, it was because he'd had a heart attack and they revived him. He woke up to kidneys that refused to work properly. He felt like he should have died with that heart attack, but instead he had to claw his way back. He had to learn how to walk again. He had to get dialysis every few days. So this farmer, this active, albeit overweight and older gentleman, went from living a hard but fulfilling life to working hard just to live in the flash of an eye. He wasn't doing that again. So he refused the intubation. The doctors called his wife, I guess, to check on him. She was clear that intubation wasn't what he would want, and within an hour, he was gone. He was dead. My sister assures me that even though Dola couldn't make it back to him, he wasn't alone when he died. A nurse and a doctor sat with him, holding his hand. As I talk quietly with my sister on my phone, the green room is abuzz with activity. I need to finish sewing, and so I can't really get up and leave. No one really notices me anyway. They're all caught up in their own experience. But I notice. I notice the juxtaposition between the topic of conversation and the activity in the room. It makes it all feel really rather surreal. Over the next few days, I feel as if I'm in a fog. I'm struck by how my life has shifted. It seems like I was meandering down the pathway of my life, understanding where I was at, and then in the blink of an eye, it all shifted. I'm clear I'm still on my own pathway. I just feel like the Thule fog has come up strong and thick, and all of a sudden, I can't see the next step to take. I've experienced this kind of thing in other times in my life. There's moments when I don't know what to do. And most often it has a similar, although perhaps less intense feeling than hearing about the death of a loved one. But I still have that feeling like I don't know where to step. I can't see my pathway clearly anymore. I don't know what makes sense. My guess is that you wouldn't have to look too far in your own life to come up with a scenario where the world starts to fade. It may or may not involve death. It could be the loneliness that you feel all of a sudden when you're at a party. Or maybe you've been reflecting on your life and you wonder, how did I get to this age this fast? I've been pondering about what gets us through this kind of fog. What do we do? What do you do when you can't see the next step? And I've arrived at the conclusion that we have to step into the fog. Now, it isn't my first inclination, and I imagine it isn't yours either. I mean, I can't see what's in there, so I tend to want to be careful, or I want to put up my hands, or I want to stop in my tracks and wait. I want to find something that's going to cut through the fog, like a knife or a flashlight, something. But I think what's called for in these moments is a kind of surrender. In a sermon from March 2011, the Reverend Rob Eller Isaacs, a venerated UU preacher, talks about how he told his dad that he thought surrender was an important part of spiritual maturity. His dad discounts the idea right away, having grown up watching Hitler round up people for mass execution. But Reverend Eller Isaacs says, the problem is that in response to their completely understandable fear of mind control, various generations of religious liberals have cut themselves off from the sustaining power that spiritual surrender can provide. This church, he was speaking of his home church in St. Paul, Minnesota, this church and others like it have enshrined that fear by... Let me say that again. This church and others like it have enshrined that fear by removing both the concept and the practice of surrender from our spiritual vocabulary. But surrender or submission is an essential aspect of effective spiritual practice. Spiritual maturity requires that we come to understand and to experience that there is a power far beyond our own, a power on which we have no choice but to rely. And the only way to come to understand it is to experience. Though our hesitance and our suspicion of surrender is well-founded, we hunger for the replenishment and the strengthening of faith that only surrender can bring. I would ask you to try this on for size. The language may be a little uncomfortable for you, but I would ask you to try it on for size anyway. You see, it fits for me. It fits for me in dealing with grief, and it fits for me at other times when I lose my way. Because it's my lived experience of what happens when I reach a space where I just have to trust life. I just have to trust that love that's far bigger than me. When I just have to surrender to the experience. Now please notice, I'm not asking you to capitulate to anyone. I'm not asking us to give over to somebody else's truth. Even in asking you to just try this on, I'm not asking you to take what I say without testing it through your analysis. Rather, I'm talking about those moments when we don't have control, when it's outside of us. And then I'm suggesting that we surrender to that still small voice within us. What I notice when I do this work is that I transform. My faith deepens, as Reverend Eller Isaacs says, and I feel replenished in the end. I notice this in other people as well. You see, I do women's empowerment work where I've sat circle with women who are doing deep grief work. You know, that kind of grief work that comes from your toes and makes you wail. My job in the circle is simple. My job is simply to hold that woman as she grieves, no matter what it looks like. To just hold her and witness her. And what I notice when I hold these women is, first, that they're surrendering to a process, that they're dancing with grief. And I notice that as they empty themselves to this experience, they're transformed. The Reverend Peter Friedrich says, "Letting go is an affirmative act. It's a choice we make to stop beating our heads against the wall and open ourselves up to another way. It's a point of departure, which means that it's also the moment that something new can begin. I know for me that in the first year after my dad died, I danced with grief. There were moments when I couldn't move. And then there were moments when not only could I move, but I experienced absolute joy in knowing all that my father had taught me. The dance was learning to surrender to that process, allowing myself to be exactly where I was in that moment, whether it was frozen or whether it was being grateful or whether it was someplace else. And as I moved with this flow, I uncovered some amazing gifts. I discovered that I was able to let go of what I thought I knew. What I thought I knew about me, what I thought I knew about my dad, what I thought I knew about our relationship. And in that process of letting go of what I thought I knew, all of a sudden, I could feel Dad in my very bones. He was with me. And it allowed me to recognize the places that we didn't agree And then by noticing those places and making peace with those places, I found myself transformed into a better version of myself. Dear ones, when you find that the Thule fog is coming up on you thick and you can't see that next step on the path, I hope that you can be open to what the fog is offering you. I hope that you can surrender to your own heart's knowing. And I hope that you will surrender to and reap the transformation that is sure to follow. Blessings upon your journey.